Welcome to episode 19 of Understanding Latin American Politics, the podcast. I'm Greg Weeks. I'm a political scientist at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And today I'm talking to Tom Long, who is a lecturer in international relations at the University of Reading in the UK. He studies international relations and U.S. Latin American relations more specifically. He just published a book, Latin America Confronts the United States, Asymmetry and Influence, which will be coming out in paperbacks, hopefully in the not-too-distant future. And he also actually has an article coming out right now in the Latin Americanist, the journal that I edit, and it just came out, so literally hot off the presses, digitally anyway. So, Tom, thank you so much for taking some time.
Thank you very much for having me.
I had some questions laid out. There's one thing I want to start with, real easy, but I want to start doing this with people. I want to just ask, what got you interested in Latin America in the first place?
Yeah, that's a question that's an interesting one for me because I grew up in a rural area in Missouri, about an hour outside of St. Louis, with no obvious connection to Latin America. But my dad is a doctor, a physician, and he, through some connections in the School Sisters of Notre Dame, actually, has now for about 25 years been leading, along with my mom and other medical professionals and people from the community in that small town, a trip to Honduras every year. And has been based initially around the area of El Progreso. And from there, actually, they've traveled to many parts of the country over the last 25 years. And so when I was pretty young, I had a chance to go on a couple of those trips. And so that was sort of the initial way that I got interested. The way that that sort of fused with what I do now for me with IR is that by coincidence, on one of those trips, I was there to watch the beginning of the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, and we were sort of huddling around a television set with Hondurans in a mining town in the mountains of Honduras, watching that happen. And there was something about that that really made me think in a different way. I was pretty young at the time. Made me think in a different way about what U.S. power looks like from abroad. And from there, I really started getting interested in the history of U.S. Latin American relations, as well as in political issues in Latin America.
Okay, interesting. So then you have relatives who are real doctors.
I do. They try not to hold that against me.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's talk about U.S. Latin American relations. And one of the premises of your book is that Latin American foreign policy tends to be ignored. Why do you suppose that happens, and how likely is that to change?
Well, I think that there are a couple of reasons why that's happened in the U.S. Academy, and a somewhat different set of reasons why it's happened in the Latin American Academy. In the U.S., I think that you have a couple different schools, and this is something I explored with my mentor, Bob Pastor, several years back while I was working on my PhD, a couple different schools, and many people have written about these. On the one hand, you have establishment figures who often had some sort of a connection to the U.S. policy process, worked in government, etc., and therefore often prioritized the bureaucratic politics approach or explanation to U.S. policy to Latin America. And it was really more of a study of U.S. policy to Latin America than it was of U.S. Latin American relations, though it might have been called that. And then, of course, we have the surge of criticism against that perspective, and particularly against the earlier triumphalist perspective on U.S. policy toward Latin America, where the focus is on how U.S. power has been misused in the hemisphere, the way in which dictatorships have been supported, in which the U.S. has intervened overtly or covertly. And so from a sort of theoretical perspective, what was important was to understand U.S. power and its effects, for different reasons. In Latin America, you know, I think we see the influence of dependency theory to some extent, shaping how the region's international relations are understood. And in that perspective, Latin American policymakers serve as lackeys of a sort to the empire in the most extreme version of that perspective. And that's a perspective that can also have the effect of taking agency away from Latin American leaders. And to say that Latin American leaders have agency doesn't necessarily imply that they're using that power for the benefit of their own people, but it does mean that we need to understand their motivations and actions.
And do you think, I mean, because I know that I fall into that trap plenty of times in thinking about the U.S. side, do you think it's very likely that either in the U.S. or Latin America will have a sustained attention to policymakers beyond like the high profile Hugo Chavez sort of thing?
I think that we've seen that shift to some extent already. And you're right that a certain number of policymakers always have drawn attention. You know, there's no shortage of attention paid to Fidel Castro and his important role throughout the Cold War. But what that tended to do was either to hold him up as a hero or a villain, depending on your perspective, and to give the impression that the only way that Latin American leaders achieved stature and influence was in that kind of high-profile Castro-Chavez model, right? As opposed to achieving influence in perhaps a somewhat more cooperative way, cooperative either with the U.S., with international organizations, or with other Latin American states. But I do think that it started to switch to some extent, that we've seen historians, in part as a result of digging into Latin American archives, seeing how much was happening there and that there is an important story to understand there.
And kind of following up on that, you talk a lot about policymakers in the book. And in general, do you think IR scholars focus too much on structural conditions to the detriment of understanding the impact of these individuals?
Well, I think they're both really important, and it's easy, perhaps, in my perspective, to go too far in the other way, though I really do try to keep the idea of asymmetry also in sort of to the forefront of my analysis. You know, I think it's very attractive to look at structural conditions because you can more easily posit broad explanations of phenomena in international politics. Looking at individuals is almost by definition more idiosyncratic.
Right.
And so it's less satisfying in terms of trying to come up with broader explanations of international politics to look at it from that perspective. So again, I do think it's important to try to look at both of those. And to try to look at how individual policymakers draw on different repertoires of political action, of foreign policy action, different tools, how they interface with institutional contexts, both internationally and domestically, to engage with those structures, to pursue their own goals and what they perceive as their nation's goals within those structures.
Yeah, because I mean, I like the part about Kubitschek in particular for Brazil. Here's a guy who's just chugging away, chugging away, chugging away, and you know, really pushing against the asymmetry, and in some ways perhaps successfully he was getting message across to Washington, but that's a story that often just gets completely ignored.
Yeah, Kubitschek is an interesting figure. For listeners who are less familiar with him, he was Brazil's president in the late 1950s, and he's elected on a real developmentalist platform promising 50 years of development in five, perhaps best remembered today as being the president who moved the capital of Brazil from Rio to Brasilia, building that city out of nothingness, really. And he, in an international context, places himself firmly in the U.S. camp, but he grows really frustrated with the strictures of U.S. policymaking and the rather narrow approach of the Eisenhower administration in many ways, particularly to questions of economic development in Latin America. And so as he begins to chafe against those structures, he looks for ways of exploiting political opportunities that happen in the United States. And the one that he seizes onto initially is the attack on Richard Nixon during the vice president's visit to Caracas, and sees this as evidence of damage to the Pan-American ideal that comes out of World War II, and offers his pre-existing plan of economic development and cooperation for economic development as the surefire solution to put Pan-Americanism back on the map.
Yeah. Now, coming back to current events, do you see any Latin American policymakers now who might not receive enough attention for what they've been doing?
Well, I think one interesting case is Santos in Colombia. And on the one hand, Santos has received a lot of attention, right? He's winning the Nobel Prize for what he's done domestically and to some extent for holding those talks in Cuba. But the U.S.-Colombian side of this is, I think, very interesting. And I think Santos has managed it in an interesting way and in a way that's quite different from some of his predecessors who also sought peace with the FARC. And that part of the story has not gotten a lot of attention. The U.S. role in the peace talks has been really quite muted. It's been present, and certainly present through Bernie Aronson, who has played a bit more visible role in the late stages of the peace talks. But early on, the U.S. was almost invisible. And I think that was in part by Santos' design, that Santos recognized that having the U.S. Play such a major role, given the U.S. connection to Plan Colombia and how that would be seen by the FARC and by some other segments of Colombian society, that having the U.S. be so visible as it had been during Andres Pastrana's peace talks might not be very helpful this time around. So I think there's an interesting story there that deserves more attention.
Okay, cool. Now, I've been interested for a while in understanding the extent of U.S. influence in Latin America, which is something the article that you've just published examines. Can you talk a little bit about how you view U.S. influence, especially in terms of unpacking the concept of power?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there had been a view that U.S. influence had declined dramatically. And to some extent, this has to do with the United States being distracted, is often the word that's used. The United States dealing with a number of other crises around the world, and therefore having lost touch, maybe, or lost its central role in the Americas. But I think that power is more complicated and more deeply rooted than policymakers' attention at any given time. again, Bob Pastor wrote about there being a whirlpool, cycles of U.S. attention and inattention. But the United States would step in moments of crisis, and it was able to do that because its power in the region was deeply rooted in a number of ways. So in the article, I try to unpack that idea of power, and that's something that I've also been working on in the concept or in the context of influence from small states. In another piece that just came out in International Studies Review online a week or so ago. Okay. And so what I try to do in that piece is to look a bit more conceptually at ideas of power. In the piece in The Latin Americanist, I put that really into the context of U.S. Latin American relations and try to find indicators for different measures of power. So I think when we look at types of U.S. structural economic power, in a way, even as U.S. policymakers have been distracted, that type of power has grown in Latin America. If you look at things like the role of the U.S. dollar in Latin America as seen through the issuance of debt, whether that's corporate or government debt, the Latin American companies and countries, again, going to New York financial markets, that in a lot of ways has deepened since the financial crisis, which that crisis, of course, was one of the triggers for people believing that U.S. power in the region and more broadly was in serious decline. If you look at military power and try to compare that to both military power of states in the region and military power that any other state from outside the region could potentially bring to bear, there's really no question that U.S. predominance has not declined in any meaningful way, though I and many other people hope that U.S. willingness to use military power in the way that it did in the past has declined. But in terms of that capability, it exists. And in terms of the role that the U.S. military plays, not through direct coercion, but through links to Latin American militaries and societies, that is still deep and relatively unrivaled, for as much as some would like to trump up major accusations of Hezbollah in Latin America or serious Iranian and Russian roles in Latin America. Those are really quite limited when you look to the deeper power of the U.S. military in the region still. So I think it's easy maybe to focus on what has changed in terms of the United States' role in the hemisphere without seeing how much really remains the same in those respects of deeper economic structural power, military power, and other types of influence.
Okay. And inevitably, given the fact that inauguration is 1 week away, how much do you think a shift from Barack Obama to Donald Trump would affect influence, would affect this dynamic? Or is that also overstated, that kind of change, that possible change?
Well, I think the possible change is quite great in a number of ways. I wrote the article that came in that was in the Latin Americanist before the election, and right. I might have added some caveats had I written it after. But I think if you look in terms of U.S. soft power in the region, that takes a hit, at least in the immediate term, though it took a hit under George W. Bush as well. U.S. soft power certainly declined if we look at the public image of the United States, but then it recovered really, really quickly under Obama. So it's hard to say how deeply rooted some of those sorts of changes are. But I think it will depend ultimately on what Trump does. if Trump decides he's going to follow through with some of his rhetoric and break apart NAFTA or go after the United States free trade agreements with other countries in the hemisphere, that's really going to affect the United States' longer-term influence in the region. I think most policymakers are willing to discount a substantial amount of campaign rhetoric, even when it's as hateful as Trump's often was, concerning Mexico in particular, but not exclusively. But if you start to back away from the sorts of commitments that the United States made, around which countries in the hemisphere have structured important parts of their economies, and certainly in the case of Mexico, in that case, yes, the U.S. influence is going to decline in really important ways. And I think that's why, though those agreements may certainly be imperfect, are imperfect, it's important for the United States to send signals that it's going to honor them, and that it will maybe work with countries in the region to address the problems that come out of deep interdependence. But if we just try to ignore that interdependence, break that interdependence, whether it's backing away from trade agreements or whether it is rounding up immigrants and destroying immigrant communities, transnational communities, really, then that's going to do deep and lasting harm to U.S. influence in the region, more than what we saw in terms of the fluctuation in public image.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, is that under George W. Bush, he was a very unpopular president in Latin America, and used all kinds of rhetoric, you know, about Hugo Chavez and leftists and others, but he didn't change anything fundamental about the way the U.S. did things in Latin America. And he didn't challenge basic assumptions about how relations would go, whereas Trump, at least rhetorically, is doing that.
Yes, that's right. I agree with you. Bush's stances elsewhere in the world were deeply unpopular in Latin America, of course, the Iraq War above all. When it came to relations within the hemisphere, certainly the way that the administration handled Venezuela at certain points was not popular, but that was pretty far down the list in terms of what the Bush administration's priorities were, where its attention was. It largely stayed at the level of rhetoric or the actions of lower level officials. That's very different from what we are seeing and hearing from Trump. If he were in fact to follow through on some of those promises.
Right. Okay, we are out of time. Tom Long is lecturer in international relations at the University of Reading. Make sure to go check out his book, Latin America Confronts the United States, Asymmetry and Influence. And of course, the articles that we've been talking about that he's published just recently. Tom, thank you again for taking the time.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.